MSU Today is online at SpartanPodcast.com. Here's Russ White.
Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with MSU's Deputy Athletic Director Greg Iani.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome Greg Iani, who has been the mastermind behind a lot of the physical changes that affect Spartan athletics, along with the big program ideas and vision of Mark Hollis. So those scoreboards are pretty spectacular.
They are, President Simon. We're very pleased with how they've turned out, the excitement in the community. I think it's brought a nice change to Spartan Stadium. There's kind of a newness, a little bit more excitement. And, you know, we're delivering the a little more of a fan amenity to the folks that are attend our games and increase the value of that ticket, which I think is important in the long run to future Spartan football.
So how do video board projects like the ones that the people saw in Spartan Stadium for the Boise State game, how do they start?
Well, a lot of the stuff starts to the guy on my left here, and he and I have concocted a lot of things.
It starts with we can't get parts anymore for the old.
That's exactly right. We were going to have to replace what we had put in there, and that's really we knew in our long range plan that at some point in time here in the next 2-3 years we were going to have to make a change. And as Mark just mentioned, we couldn't get parts anymore for the existing board, and so that kind of forced our hand a little bit.
I think beyond facilities, events, and many of the other things that you oversee, you have a unique perspective, maybe more so than most people, being that you were a student athlete here at Michigan State on the baseball team. I think just recently you discovered you were academic All Big Ten, so congratulations.
Yeah, 20 years after the fact.
But, you know, your wife, Jamie, was an all-world athlete down at Albion, many times in the Hall of Fame there. You had two children that have come through as student athletes, and you yourself having that experience coming back in 93, talking at a little bit higher level, what's your perspective of intercollegiate athletics, its role within the university and its role within the state of Michigan?
Well, Mark, that's a great question. I have been blessed that both my kids earned letters here, which I never did, which is something I, you know, wish I would have, but wasn't quite good enough, but they did. And the fact that they got degrees from here and in two different manners, you know, my daughter Allison was an exceptional student, exceptional athlete, transferred back here, is now a very successful teacher in the Williamson District and coaching volleyball there. And her experience was totally different from my son's. Anthony, as many people know, has faced the challenges of being in the autism spectrum. And I've learned to appreciate the institution in a different way than I did prior to them being here. Allison just participating at that high level and playing at that high level obviously was a great thrill. But Anthony, that the university helped him live his dreams academically has given me appreciation for what we do for people of the state of Michigan at all levels. We have some exceptionally brilliant people here at Michigan State. That's obvious. We're an institution of higher education. But how we reach out and help individuals achieve their dreams and goals who have challenges in their lives has really, really impressed me and my wife. And this institution, the depth and the broadness of how this institution impacts the state of Michigan is what I've taken from the experiences that my children have had here. It's been really, really heartfelt on our part.
I think one comment I can make on top of that is you say, what is the value of the student athlete coming out? You take your two children in particular. One has gone on to make an impact on other young people's lives by becoming a teacher, by being a coach, and the other engaged in statewide outreach for autism and affecting a lot of people across the state of Michigan in a positive way. So I commend that. Jumping back to the facility aspects, and again, since 93, you've had an opportunity to be engaged and involved with a lot of people on campus. Ron Flynn, who oversees our physical plant, Chuck Guyano, and now Vinnie Gore with our residence life and hospitality. It really is like a city, and it's a collaboration, and you're kind of the, I guess you'd call it the mayor of our little area within campus. But the relationships and how this campus works and how it's self-sustaining, can you speak to that collaboration just a little bit?
Well, I think, Mark, I was trained very well at Ohio University, where I worked for 14 years before I came back home to Michigan State. We had a president there by the name of Charles Ping, who I took a lot from him, understanding the relationship between athletics and the institution. And when I came to Michigan State, I brought that with me and found that there was a very similar sense of that here. And the people that the best part of my job are the people that I work with on campus. And I do believe that we keep the perspective as well as we can of what the university mission is and what our goals and objectives are relative to that mission. So when you get a chance to work with folks like Ron Flynn, who's been here a long, long time and is probably the best storyteller on campus, I think, about the background and what's going on here at Michigan State, and all the individuals that I get to work with, that's my enjoyment. Because if you lose touch in athletics with the rest of the institution, then I think we're not fulfilling our mission as an athletic department.
In a recent meeting with President Simon, she made a comment that really hit with me, and I really appreciated her making this comment. I'd like to get feedback from both of you on this, but she basically talked about a positive environment with an opportunity to argue. And it struck me very, very strong, because it's the way I like to work. It's getting different points of view, feeling the openness as you're trying to go through the process and make a decision. And you know, President Simon, maybe you can speak to that a little bit, because it was probably meant kind of off the cuff, but it was very impactful when you said those words in the meeting that we were together.
Well, it was a conversation regarding what we can learn from the experiences of other institutions. And the great thing about a university, from my perspective, is the capacity to have difficult intellectual discourse and do that in a way that supports collegial values, whether that's a set of students in a residence hall room who are arguing about life's issues with very little information but great passion, or whether it occurs in a serious debate about whether, in fact, what are the dimensions of global climate change, a very controversial and very complex issue. And I think administrators and universities sometimes lose that capacity to want to continue to argue, and everybody wants their case to be made neatly and directly, and they've got all their defenses up before they take it to someone else. And it really means that we lose the intellectual energy, we lose ideas in order how to be better.
What's your thoughts on that, Greg, as far as the word argue?
Well, you both know that I'm a fairly opinionated individual, and I came from a family where we discussed and argued a lot. And I can say that since I've been here, this is my 20th football season, into my 20th year, that I have never felt a time or experienced a time where discourse and discussion was not encouraged. And I think that's why people stay here. I mean, the strength of this place are the people. And people stay, I think, because they feel like they're contributing. And part of contributions to any organization is being allowed to speak and discuss and tell folks what you think. Now, it may not be agreed upon, or your ideas may not be accepted, but the fact that you can verbalize those and you feel like you're part of something, I think is critical. And that's the way it is around here. We have a lot of people here who've been here a long time, and they stay for a lot of reasons. I think that's one of them.
President Simon, you made the reference of walking through the residence hall systems and actually having an individual that was operating a machinery to clean the floors. And,
yeah.
as you and Vinnie Gore were walking by, she had a comment on ways to make things better. And you paused and you absorbed what she had to say. And I thought that was a great story of openness, that sometimes the best suggestions come from those that are there doing the task each and every day. A difficult transition for anyone is to go from a peer to a leadership role. And Greg and I have worked together since I came back in 95. And as I look back, you think of the times where, you know, I was kind of the guy biting at the heels of coming up with new ideas, new suggestions, and sometimes to great frustration of those in operations, those that have to execute the plans. And it's kind of ironic that the mood has shifted a little bit in the athletic department, in that I'm going, yeah, but wait, we've got to think about this. And Greg is coming forward with many new ideas, many new suggestions, and we almost chuckle about that sometimes.
It's switched around a little bit, but I think, Mark, we've been good for each other in that those years when we were peers. I think maybe I rubbed off on you a little bit, where you may have taken a step back and looked at things in a more conservative light. And conversely, I think you pushed me toward looking at things in a more liberal light, and how can we get things done, and those kinds of things. And so, you know, we've collaborated on a lot of things. It's been a lot of fun. From the hockey game to the basketball game in Detroit, and a lot of smaller things in between. And we've both got our wings clipped a few times by the president and her predecessor. And you know, I think the great thing is we've pushed the envelope, and we've never been told by anyone here not to push the envelope. Now, we've been told that the envelope has been pushed too far, but and to move back a little bit. But the beauty of Michigan State is they've never said, hey, go into your office and don't bother us anymore. And you know, that makes for an enjoyable experience.
And President Simon, I think that's some of the aspects that athletics tries to deliver to you is the research and innovation focus. It's trying to make things happen in different way in sports. And I think, you know, the same can be said about your leadership in this role. Is I've driven many, many times down Grand River past the Art Museum, where comments have come, not always flattering, not always positive, but are now transitioning to, I'm starting to appreciate it. I'm starting to like the building. And it's really, I think, projecting the type of image that you want to get out of a facility like that, the FRIB project, the research corridor. The things that we're doing collaboratively at the same time with athletics and the university are really demonstrating maybe a transition in our time. Maybe it's the right time to be making these moves of improvement, while many folks in Michigan feel like they can't make those improvements, and we're finding ways to get positive things done.
Well, if you think about the Art Museum, or, you know, sort of cycling back a bit to the scoreboard question, you can do something that fills a niche and checks a box, or you can do something that has the potential to be a real game changer. And I think the Art Museum will be a game changer. I think people are beginning to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not a community with great architecture.
Mm-hmm.
This is not necessarily a state that prides itself on getting people to come because there's great architecture. But it is, we know from the experience around the world, that great architecture connected with an art museum can have a very positive transformational effect on communities. And as we continue to grow, and we have to be viewed as a very cosmopolitan community. That's the nature of the world, not just international in a sense of demographics, but really cosmopolitan in the opportunities we provide. The Wharton Center does that. The quality of the performances by the College of Music, because you're going to be able to go to a new hall in the music building and hear a pianist that's going to play on the stage of Carnegie Hall. That's really neat. Mm-hmm. That's really neat. And so part of it is in how you translate that into other things. And so, you know, it goes back to sort of a little bit at the beginning that you can sort of replace scoreboards, or you can do something that has a potentially more dramatic impact. And also, in your case, and I think in what we were doing with the art museum, has the potential to gain some revenue, because you're not timid about the risk of sponsorships and other things in your case, that helps you be able to do something bigger and better than you might imagine if you just sort of get over that inertial barrier of just sort of doing the minimum.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Michigan State University President Luanna Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis are talking with MSU's Deputy Athletic Director Greg Iani.
I think the case in many of these, the work that we do in athletics, the art museum, EFRIB, is it takes vision and risk, and it takes a lot of communication, and it takes an individual to absorb, mm-hmm. you know, that feedback coming back and be able to present some art. And sports are designed to create emotion and create passion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I believe we've done a very good job of that in recent time of creating that. It's not always a success in everybody's mind. There is adversity, there is failure, and it's how you adapt to those and how you respond. But it has been extremely interesting for me. You know, I'm very proud of the art museum. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting to me to see perceptions of art change over time, just based upon observation and maybe frequency with it, and to see a person or an individual go from "I don't like it" to "I appreciate it," and mm-hmm. I've found that very gratifying.
Excuse me. The great thing about art and with the building that we've built on Grand River is that you can look at it and not like it. Which is fine, and because the architect is an artist, and mm-hmm. artists try to get a response out of people. And so the initial response is, "Oh, I don't like it." But as you look at it, you start to pick pieces out that are that you know really, really hit you. Now, to me, that building, and I want to digress in the art museum, but the northwest corner of that building, that angle is spectacular. Now, there are other parts of the building I haven't warmed to you, but that part of the building is absolutely spectacular. So the artist has touched me, the architect has touched me, and I think you have to get all the construction stuff out of there, get it away from there so people can take a look at it. But I've been in it, and I know you and Nancy are going to go through it, Mark. The gallery space is spectacular, absolutely spectacular. And it's a great addition to the community. And I go back to what I said earlier. My art museum was the Scandalaris Center, because that architecture is nothing like anything else on campus. But to get back to a point that I touched on earlier, no one said no. Now, there was some initial pieces of that building that we brought forward, and Dr. Simon looked at it and said, "No, I think this needs to be brought down a little bit." Dr. Poston saw it and said, "Nah, I don't like this." So we massaged it. But the architectural intent of the building was allowed to happen. So we pushed that envelope and created, you know, a very iconic building on campus. And that's what's happened to a far, far greater extent with the Art Museum.
I guess the last focus I'd put from my perspective on the art museum is in January, I had an opportunity to be in London and tour the Olympic venues and entered what I normally would just call a pool, but looked at the aquatic facility over there in a whole new light with the knowledge that the architect of the Olympic swimming and diving venue was the same architect that was working right here on campus. So to look at the lines, to look at the diving platform, to look at the uniqueness of how that was all put together, sort of took what's becoming a crotchety old athletic director to look at venues in a different frame.
Yeah. I think that's the value of art. It's the value of lots of sort of visual experiences. And we've got to sort of you know, when we think about the capacity of the video boards with their clarity and things that you can see, the question is sort of an interesting way about how we think about not simply those replaying a game thing, but how can we interject art, some other kinds of things in the game experience that helps us to tie together those two worlds in ways that we have in this conversation. Because
right.
People sort of think you have to be in one or the other, and there are ways in which through the visual capacities that are available for us to begin to bridge some interesting gaps. You can do that in terms of performances, as the marching band did in the Boise State game.
Exactly, and game two is going to be better than game one, and game three is going to be better than game two, and it's just an evolution of that form of art.
And the same is true with the exhibits at the art museum. And if you think about what you want for a university, no matter what part of the university that you're from, you want to be able to have people come and say that you were bold enough to create what people will define as the norm for the next generation, the next decade. Now, part of that that you all have done with the outdoor hockey game, you know, and it's not about an event. It's about an attitude and a passion to keep doing that, because people can check off events and say, gee whiz, we did that, isn't that neat, and we'll come back and say it again. It's a question of whether or not you're prepared to keep doing it. And I think that keep doing it in a fashion that is both responsible from a cost perspective and at the same time builds for an image for the institution for the future. And I think, you know, then in the case of the video board project, you can replace it. But I think we have some interesting capacities to do some things that are not just showing a game in a greater, you know, high-def sense.
Right. It's a 4-hour opportunity mm-hmm. with a captive audience to tell the Michigan State story, not mm-hmm. only athletically but academically, and culturally.
And we now have the capacity to do that, which we didn't have before. So our challenge is simply to take advantage of that.
Right.
And not because it's an educational setting, but because it is part of a university.
So while we continue to have challenges at Spartan Stadium, both on the field and sustaining a winning attitude there, we do as well in the facilities with upgrades that'll take place in the future. In many of the spectator areas that need attention, they're not high donor-based projects, more operational in orientation. I think as you walk over to Old College Field, one of my statements I've made is stadium by stadium, perhaps not the number one stadium, but collectively as a site and a location where it is on campus, I would argue it is the best facility that you're going to find out there. You go over to Breslin and the addition to Berkowitz, the Berkowitz Center for Men's and Women's Basketball, the practice facilities, the opportunities that building has, not only for athletic but university events, has really been a significant upgrade. Jennison, a sleepy old building that's kind of been brought back to life for many of our sports. You've touched so many different things with bricks, mortar, but also with the events like the event that will be in Jennison on December 15th. The combination of bricks and mortar and the living events have really been kind of a trademark of your tenure here.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, Mark. I've been blessed to be here at the right time with the right people. And one of our biggest challenges left that is, to me, as far as I'm concerned, is Spartan Stadium. And not only from an operational standpoint, but from a aesthetic standpoint. Spartan Stadium used to be on the edge of campus. Now it's very close to the center of campus, and there's a lot of foot traffic that goes by there. And as we move through these projects at the stadium in the next, and we design future projects that I may not have the opportunity to do, but I want to make sure that we create a space with Spartan Stadium that fits the rest of the campus architecture and fits the rest of the campus design. Master plan, and we've got that, and hopefully we'll address that over the next decade or so.
Well, I think it's important for our listeners to, because universities are somewhat confusing, and that what we've been able to do through Mark's leadership, your sense of how to produce value in the context of these facilities, is we've done this through the entrepreneurial efforts of successful programs and tickets. So the people who buy our tickets are essentially the patrons of these facility renovations. We've had a very, very generous donor base. If you think about Old College Field, we were not able to do that all at the same time because we didn't have a single donor to write a check, and we were very deliberate that we needed to do this through donor dollars. That this was not something that we could reasonably afford to think about through state appropriations or student tuition. But it's the image of the university, it's the connection of the university to people, not simply to athletics, that helps those donors to feel comfortable in writing checks, not only to athletics, but to other areas, in the same way that Nancy and Mark have written a check for the art museum. And so we've been blessed by people who have come forward to help do the work. The challenge with Spartan Stadium, in the same way it's my challenge with the steam tunnels on the North Campus and a few other things along the way, is that we really didn't, as an institution for a period of time, plan for the things that needed to be fixed. And I'm not sure how people thought they were going to be fixed, but we simply didn't plan for them. I think one of the things that Fred and I have tried to do over a long period of time is to figure out a way to do that. And sometimes the bill just comes due. And the restrooms in Spartan Stadium, fixing the infrastructure so that it's safe, are just bills that come due.
Right.
And we're going to try to do as much as we can through, again, donations of people who want to support us, so that it's best for the community, not just best for football. And we're going to also try to be creative, and that's sort of back to the size and scope of the scoreboards, particularly on the north end. By some incremental costs, we were able to look at sponsorships and a revenue stream that not only helped pay for the scoreboards, but also potentially in the long run will give us some flexibility to do some of these other repairs without raising ticket prices as much. So all of it sort of fits together in a way that people don't often see. They just see a shiny project and wonder where, you know, in this time of difficulty it comes from.
Yeah, people forget that, you know, Spartan Stadium comes to life 8 times a year, but it's there 365. And it's important to me that how it fits in with the rest of the campus architecture. And as we move around and continue, I remember the statement that you made to me, Dr. Simon, when we were designing the tower. And you said, Greg, make darn well certain that tower looks like the rest of the campus. And it does. It does. It if you look at it, the brick, the stone fits in with the architecture on campus, even though it is a massive structure. And that's really what we need to do with the rest of the stadium as we work toward meeting these goals and finishing up the things that need to be done over there.
I think if I could summarize and kind of close this session up, what I hear is the number one, athletics, like many different areas across campus, strives to be of value back to the university, both financially and in all that we do. But as I listen to President Simon, it hits right on the theme that we try to instill within athletics and across campus, is that no matter how good you do your job, it takes people doing a great job in their areas right by your side in order for the overall program to be successful. If Chuck's not out raising money, Greg can't design fabulous buildings. If Paul's not putting together the production, Paul and John Lewandowski and their shops, the video boards are going to be very dull, just sitting there by themselves. Likewise, if the university and all the operating units that the president's responsible for don't have appreciation and value for each other, standing by ourselves, we're just a pro franchise. And that's not what we strive to be. We strive to be an academic and very viable component of this institution, like every other operating unit that's on this campus, and we have to work together. So that message came out indirectly or directly during this conversation.
Thanks, Greg, for joining us.
Dr. Simon, thank you. Mark?
Thanks.
Thank you.
That was Spartan Athletics Deputy Athletic Director Greg Iani talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear this conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Please stay tuned. In a moment, Kirk Heinze talks with Reverend Penny Schwartz from People's Church in East Lansing about a discussion series beginning at the church this week on our nation's energy future.
And for more MSU Today, visit SpartanPodcast.com. You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the Michigan State University Alumni Association. And if you're the parent of a Spartan, there's no better gift you can give than a lifetime membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. Joining the MSUAA family opens the doors to our network of over 500,000 Spartans who'll help you feel right at home wherever you go, who can help connect you with Spartans on the inside, who can help you grow in your career. People who give you special treatment just because you're a Spartan. And an investment in a life membership in the MSU Alumni Association doesn't just add value to your Spartan life. It helps Spartans everywhere build more competitive skill sets and move more quickly in the direction of their dreams. Learn more about an MSUAA life membership online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The Michigan State University Alumni Association. Your personal network for life.
MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
People should know that AgBio Research is really the first front at MSU dealing with environmental issues and natural resources issues.
Dr. Steve Papke leads MSU AgBio Research. More than 300 scientists from six MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
MSU AgBio Research really is changing the face of science. If we can do that right, we create economic opportunities here in Michigan and opportunities for our researchers to make some really interesting discoveries.
Our goal is to generate economic prosperity, sustain natural resources, and enhance the quality of life for all.
We're MSU AgBio Research.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu. MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
This is an association of the three research universities in Michigan to really collaborate on a deeper level than we have in the past and highlight for ourselves and for the region and for the nation the strength in technology, innovation, new research, investment that we think is going to help change the Michigan economy.
That's University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
The mission of the URC is no less than to help transform the Michigan economy and to make this a vibrant place that young people will want to come and stay, that businesses will want to be in, because we are a place where a lot is happening, and we have the brain power for the new economy. It's here. It's in Michigan. We just need to tap it.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
So Michigan is vibrant. Michigan has all these things, and we want to signal that to the entire world.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a special pleasure to welcome to the program the Reverend Penny Schwartz. Penny's the associate pastor of the East Lansing, Michigan-based People's Church, and she's going to tell us about a very interesting and provocative educational program that the church is putting on this fall. It's called Powering Michigan's Future. Reverend Schwartz, always good to see you.
It's wonderful to be here, Kirk. Thank you very much for inviting me.
As they teach us in journalism school, you start with the what. Let's start with the what factor. What is Powering Michigan's Future?
It is a 13-week series talking about various energy sources available to us in the state of Michigan. Coal, oil, wind, solar, the list goes on and on. And we are very excited to have a variety of speakers willing to speak on behalf of all of these things, and particularly the sustainability and the future of energy. Mm-hmm. You know, we take for granted that when we get up in the morning, we flick the light switch and something happens. And we're very lucky, but can we keep doing that into the future?
You've, of course, had this approved by your education committees and various people. The enthusiasm is running quite high about this.
Yes. We have a fabulous adult education committee at the church. Sandy Bryson, recently retired MSU education specialist, is sort of really heading this up. His energy is infectious and enthusiastic. And so, yes, it has the full support, not only of the adult education committee, but of the church at large.
There are some, and we've had some of these people on the program, who say that along with water, that energy and the future of energy may be one of the most salient topics, the salient concerns as we look 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We are a nation that thrives on the consumption of energy in a variety of forms. And so it's interesting to think about... you know, what is our obligation if we're going to be consumers of vast quantities of energy? What is our obligation to take care of the earth? What is our obligation to think about people in the world who don't have access to these resources? So I'm very excited that the church is going to dig into this a little bit.
You know, Penny, I've had the pleasure of addressing some of the folks in the church on energy-related and other environmental issues. What I find really compelling. You're willing to present both sides of an issue. You mentioned you're going to have nuclear energy people in there, and you're going to have people who maybe are not high on nuclear. You're going to do the same with wind and coal. I mean, it really creates sort of a Socratic dialogue.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that that's what People's Church in some ways has always been about. I don't know if you want me to go into this now, but,
sure.
You know, we've been around for 105 years, and there were four professors at MSU. Well, actually, what would have been Michigan Agricultural College at that time, mm-hmm. who came out of four different mainline backgrounds. And they were highly pragmatic, and they said, there's no way this little collegeville can support four different churches. So how about if we come together, set our differences aside, and learn from one another and grow in faith? And so what was created from the get-go at People's Church is this willingness to be open to a variety of ideas. And so this kind of educational series is really just an extension of that history, that we're willing to look at different sides of a given issue. And I think that's important for people to then make an informed decision, whether it's about a topical issue of the day that impacts their life or about their own faith.
I'm talking to the Reverend Penny Schwartz, who's the associate pastor at People's Church in East Lansing, Michigan. Penny, when we're looking at a subject powering Michigan's future, some of our listeners may be wondering, churches are good things. The topic is a good thing. It's something that a lot of us are interested in, sustainability. But they may be wondering, why is a church doing this? I mean, is there, you deal in the realm, as a pastor, as a reverend, you deal in the realm of the ethical,
yes,
theological
hopefully.
Values. And hopefully. where's the interface between sustainability and theology?
The interface comes in a recognition that for hundreds of years, many faithful people have used Scripture, particularly the passage in Genesis that talks about giving mankind dominion over the earth, to really turn that into exploitation and domination of the earth. So it really comes down to a matter of what's your image of God, you know? And the passage right before that is the states that God creates humankind in God's image. So then, yes, we have sovereignty over the earth, but how are we really to manage that? And it doesn't take a whole lot of effort, really, to look at Scripture and understand that we're talking about a God who wills life, who creates and wills goodness and fruitfulness. And so it becomes problematic to claim that we are both made in the image of God and willing to destroy and completely exploit our natural resources for our own human benefit at the expense of the rest of creation. So that to me is the heart of this ethical issue. And it forces us as Christians and as people of other faiths, I think, really, to examine what it is that we hold as our image of God, and then how do we play that out in the world that we are a part of.
And we've done some things on the show here looking at the Native American perspective regarding right. sustainability. And you mentioned other religions, but there seems to be a theme across religions about sustainability versus exploitation.
Yes. Thank God.
So. Yes.
Thank God. And I'm very excited to say that Gordon Henry, who heads up the Native American program at MSU, will be one of the series speakers presenting that side. But we intentionally are kind of grounding, undergirding this whole series from an ethical point of view of what really is our responsibility as stewards rather than as exploiters. Yes. Of the Earth's resources.
You know, I hear sort of the genesis here, no pun intended, of perhaps a sermon. Is there going to be a sermon that is going to be associated with kicking off this series, do you think?
Well, you know, Andrew Palmerville is out of town. He's our new senior pastor. So if I can twist his arm to do that, I will do everything that I can to get him to speak to this from the pulpit.
And maybe since you've already given this so much thought, maybe he'll defer.
Well, I don't know.
We'll see.
I don't know.
A little bit of the details now on the series. When does it start? What time? How can people get there?
Beginning Wednesday, September 12th, and running through Wednesday, December 12th. The series will begin at 6:30 in the evening at the People's Church, which is at 200 West Grand River Avenue in East Lansing, right where Grand River and Michigan Avenue converge. It's open absolutely to the public. There's no charge. Everyone is welcome. And put a little plug for our community meal, if you'd like to come to that. That starts at 5:30 downstairs in the social hall. And, you know, no obligation one way or the other, but it is open to all.
And having been there, there's a lot of conversation that goes on at the meal before the presentation as well. So,
yes,
absolutely.
And it's wonderful if the speakers come a little early and you really have an opportunity in a small group, you know, eight around a table, to meet and greet these speakers.
Well, it's called Powering Michigan's Future. For more information, too, always can go to the People's Church website and look at the bulletins.
Yes, and the People's Church website is www.thepeopleschurch.com, and there is no apostrophe in peoples. We are plural, not possessive.
Penny, it's great to see you again. I've been talking with the Reverend Penny Schwartz, who's the Associate Pastor of People's Church in East Lansing, Michigan. Best of luck with Powering Michigan's Future, and thanks so much for being on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Oh, and thank you for having me, Kirk. I really appreciate it.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class, four great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
People should know that AgBio Research is really the first front at MSU dealing with environmental issues and natural resources issues.
Dr. Steve Papke leads MSU Ag Bio Research. More than 300 scientists from six MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
MSU Ag Bio Research really is changing the face of science. If we can do that right, we create economic opportunities here in Michigan and opportunities for our researchers to make some really interesting discoveries.
Our goal is to generate economic prosperity, sustain natural resources, and enhance the quality of life for all.
We're MSU Ag Bio Research.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu. MSU Ag Bio Research is changing the face of science.
I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes. Lansing, Michigan-based O'Leary Paint received gold, silver, and bronze honors from Coatings Research Group, Inc. this spring. The research group tested regional, national, and international paint products, and O'Leary products were rated the highest of all 31 paints tested. David O'Leary is president of O'Leary Paint.
Well, we're just really proud to be able to be recognized in a national study that our products came in first, second, and third. It's unusual, and to think that a small guy like that can present in a national study that well, it's a pretty unusual. It's never happened before where the same company took first, second, and third. And we've tested very well several times, and then we kind of keep it a secret. And this one put us over the top where it was really worthy of some distinction, where people were calling us from around the country saying they've never seen a study like that.
We belong to a lab group called CRGI, or Coatings Research Group, and it's a lab group of 30 paint companies worldwide, and they test all our raw materials and do the paint testing for us, so we have an independent lab, test our products, and we get a yardstick on how we're doing versus the market. And it's not, rather than us doing the testing, it's an independent lab, so we can trust the results we're getting.
That's O'Leary paint chemist Scott Bauer, who adds,
well, the rankings tell you is that we can produce just as good or better coating than all these large companies that have a giant staff of chemists. Since we're a smaller company, we need to be just as good or better because we don't have the name to push our paint. We have to have the quality behind our product and in the can to make sure that we don't have any problems.
No single paint company has ever taken the top three spots in this rating, says O'Leary.
Well, our focus has always been on the painter, the contractor, industry, and they tend to be very knowledgeable about what they're using. And they didn't need us to tell us that they made a quality product. They know firsthand. But for a homeowner, if you're only doing a project once every 4 years, it's really hard to know. And you rely on studies like this to tell you what kind of a product you're using because you don't have that experience.
Winning first, second, and third place respectively, O'Leary's Duramax 90 line, ceramic coat, and micro-spec paints are locally produced in Lansing, Michigan.
And we manufacture our own paint here. We're the largest paint manufacturer that makes house paint in the state of Michigan. Family-owned, and we produce everything right here. So, and we do all our research in the lab and make our own products. So we are producing all our products here for the Michigan market, and everything is formulated in this state and is meant for our climate because it is manufactured here and it is all tested here. So we're not making paint for the whole country. We're making paint for Michigan and northern Indiana. So I am trying to formulate coatings that match our climate and weather our climate very well.
As the largest house paint manufacturer in the state, O'Leary Paint outshone national brands such as Behr and Sherwin-Williams in the 2012 national paint ranking. Rating criteria included stain blocking, adhesion, water resistance, and washability, and O'Leary did not receive a poor rating in any category, the only brand to do so.
Bigger isn't necessarily better. We've got the same tools and technology that anybody does, and if you focus on a goal of making a quality product, you can surpass anybody in the industry. It's not that different from a bakery or a restaurant. The largest restaurant doesn't necessarily make the best food. If that were the case, then I think the United States military would be the best restaurant in the country. So I think if you care about quality and you can and we have the raw materials that are available, we can compete with anybody in the world. And we have. And I think that this has proven it.
All three of O'Leary's winning products are certified as environmentally responsible paints by GreenWise Paint, a division of Coatings Research Group, Inc.
The big thing now is to make paint greener, lower VOC, which is volatile organic compounds, which evaporate into the air and can produce smog. So we're trying to eliminate or reduce the amount of these, because there's a new green building code called LEED. So everybody's trying to get their buildings LEED certified. So we're trying to reduce that amount, be it keep the performance of the coating. Because we can make a zero VOC coating. A lot of times the performance of these zero VOC coatings isn't as good as it is with the conventional VOC. So what we're trying to do is make a midpoint, a very good quality, low odor, with a small amount of VOC, because if we get rid of all the VOC, a lot of times we're starting to lose our performance.
Bauer says quality is the main thing to keep in mind anytime you're embarking on a painting project.
I guess the bigger thing you need to do, you need to buy top quality paint. Everybody makes different lines of paint, and your time is very valuable, and you want your paint to last a long time and look very good. The more you spend on your paint, the better quality coating you're going to get for the money. You're going to have better stain resistance, better durability, better look, better application properties, better hiding, so it should take you less time to put it on, and it should look much better and last much longer.
Learn more about O'Leary Paint at O'LearyPaint.com. I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to a half a million Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.